Well, here we are. We've got Ben.
Hello.
Ben.
Yo.
And we have myself, Matt. We like to keep our names short to not make it confusing.
We're the three back, crazy white guys.
I know, right? Here we go. They may not be able to tell from the smooth silkiness of our voices. Well, that was bad. Well, welcome. Why don't we, I don't know. Why don't we talk about, with everyone, you took a vacation, right, Ben?
Sorts.
Like a spring break, right? And
yeah, Ken, you can call it a vacation.
Did you have one with the kids? You take a little spring break action or something?
Oh, we're just on spring break up here right now because ours got pushed from March to April, and then it's like we're in heavy duty lockdown right now.
Oh,
again, we got the third wave, baby. We're surfing the third wave up here.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Americans, all that finally, all that copulating and sucking face and marching. Just finally spread enough airborne virus to finally kick over our borders to come up here.
Not to mention
all you asshats coming to look at our mountains. Well, yeah. We got to come up. We're just visiting.
I've got one dose now. I'm out. I'm clear.
Clear.
Yeah.
Good to go. I don't know. Do you want to talk about I know Ben and you and I talked a little last time about like the joys of traveling as a solo parent. Well, you did. Mm. You did a little pilgrimage, right, Ken? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Right away. I did a huge trip. I did 3 weeks. And it was like. What was that? 4 months post. Yeah, I had planned in September. I pulled the kids out of school and we went west. Go west, young man.
Well, it's 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, RV style drive. What'd you do?
Well, we flew from here to Calgary.
Was that after Breck?
That's Alberta. No, this is before Breck.
Before Breck. Okay.
For all you geography majors, that is Alberta, Canada. And I got a good friend. I actually had a couple good friends that live in Calgary. And then we stayed 2 days there. And then we hopped on the train that they have, the Rocky Mountaineer train that goes from Banff, Alberta, all the way through the Rockies and deposits you in Vancouver. So we spent 2 days on that train. That's the train with the little special glass, you know, roof. And you can sit in there and you get all your meals served in there. And then you spend a night in Kelowna. We stopped for like basically 2 full days on the train. But it's like kind of like being on a cruise where you're having a mimosa at 10.
Nothing wrong with that.
And a Caesar at, you know, 1.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. And a bourbon at about 4.
Sounds about right. How did the boys take the trip?
You know what? It was good. It was good that I remember talking to my therapist about this, just the fact that like, I think so many people have that first reaction of just hunkering down and staying, you know, and definitely my youngest felt like was very clingy. Like, where are you going? You got to be with me. Like I couldn't leave him alone. Right.
Right.
A lot of the time. And, it was just, it's showing them that no, you know, we can still go out and do things and we're going to do stuff. The three of us, and we're going to travel and we're going to go places. We're going to visit our friends, you know, it just introducing that element of normalcy into our new normal.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. That was sort of that was sort of what I wanted to do. And there was a lot of people that I, you know, getting to Vancouver was amazing, being able to travel. And then actually kind of a cool sidebar on this was, so at the time, and I think we talked about this last time, Matt.
We did.
How you have that yearning, or at least I did. I just wanted to hook up with people that were experiencing the same thing or something similar to me. Like I was like, where are my people? Mm-hmm. I need to talk to. And then I remember on the GoFundMe page that my friend started for me, seeing that. And I think I talked about this last time, Matt, was that the woman that I eventually met up with when we were out in Vancouver, because her GoFundMe page appeared right next to mine. And I think the algorithm was like, basically, oh, you lost your spouse. She lost her spouse because she was in Port Coquitlam, like lazy across the country.
But that's all right.
Yeah.
But dead people. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I recognized, right. It was funny. I recognized her husband, like the picture on the GoFundMe page is like this happy family at Christmas time, three kids, the dad, the mom. Well, the dad, as I was like, why do I recognize this guy? He was the sportscaster for the Vancouver Canucks NHL hockey team. Like he basically did their podcast and did, you know, Vancouver Canucks Central, whatever. So this dude, he basically had a drug overdose, basically a fentanyl accident with some cocaine that he'd been using, unbeknownst to his wife. And then this was all coming out, I was like, oh my God, her husband died basically 5 days right after Leanne. Mm-hmm. And she was going through the exact same thing that I was going through. So I reached out to her I was trying to figure out how to do this. Actually, I used LinkedIn because I was like, I can't do Facebook. So I was like, only creeps go on Facebook.
Not as creepy as possible. Yeah. No, totally.
So I sent her an email on LinkedIn, and then it wasn't until 6 weeks later I got a response. Then we kind of did some emails back and forth. And then eventually, you know, we were texting a bit back and forth. And then when I was coming out to Vancouver on that trip in the fall, and she was still living, working in Vancouver, but living in Port Coquitlam. We actually met the one night, went out for dinner and just sat and chatted for like 3 hours. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we reference, and it probably will come up again, but we reference the Breckenridge trip, right? And I think hearing you say trying to find your people, I think that was a massive driving force to try to make that happen for me, because where I currently was, my network was not deep enough to find those people locally. Like, because mm-hmm. we hadn't lived in our town long enough to be connected to like the mm-hmm. church or an organization necessarily. Our kid, you know, the little one wasn't in school. She was barely in daycare. She wasn't even in daycare. Right. So like I had nothing locally to try to tap into beyond, you know, the guy at the gym, and he's like, well, I don't know anybody, right? Like there was just no,
cause they don't talk about it.
Yeah. And well, right. And, you know, just kind of how we're connected through the person in common, right? Amanda and locality. And, it was like, it just kind of, I think hearing you say that makes me realize like, yes, I wanted to meet all these really great people, but I also think it was also this, because I'm not meeting my people here. There's a great counseling group I go to that's a bunch of dads that have lost their spouse to cancer, mm-hmm. but that's more of like a counseling type. And most of those guys are, you know, they're all in different spaces, right? So like they're 10 years down the road, or, you know, they've got one kid left at home and three in college or whatever. Not that that's a, you know, not that they're not helpful. It was just a little different. And it just seemed that our like-mindedness and where we were all at being so fresh, saying finding your tribe is, I think, kind of a cool thing, or finding your community.
And doing it in person versus online, I think was huge too, that connection. Cause there's all those like Facebook groups, and I joined probably seven of them trying to see like there was some sort of connection or something. And it just never, ever clicked at all. Whether they throw these things out there all the time, like blah, blah, blah. Are you guys getting this too? Just trying to reach out and go, hey, is there somebody out there like me? And it just, I don't know. It just didn't connect with me, but like getting together in person.
Oh yeah.
With our group was just
literally what would we figured it out last time? Like 120 days before COVID.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Isn't it crazy? It feels November. Like a freaking lifetime ago.
I know.
And it was November. It does. So November, December, January, February, March. Okay. So 150 days, right?
Yeah.
And then everything's locked down. No planes, no trains, no automobiles. Like, No, I agree. And in person, there's a lot that happens there, right? Like, and I love what our great friend Molly Hood says, like, you know, this is as ridiculous as it should be. Like, it was totally ridiculous, but it was awesome at the same time, right? So I think that's really important too, to find those people, like you said. And it was, you know, again, you're saying like it was kind of a driving force, not only to show the new normal in whatever the hell that means, right? Bring that back. But like, I'm about ready to take my first trip in forever. And it's going to be over 10 days, or it's going to be 9 days away from the youngest. And that's the longest we've ever been apart since she's been born.
Right.
And I'm like, oh boy. So it's going to be fascinating, but it needs to be done. Like there's no one that's questioning doing this, right? But it's because at some point, even though we're dads and we were and maybe one day again be partners, and but we're still us. And even my late wife and I talked about taking trips as just ourselves, like leave the kid or kiddos at home because you need to. Yeah, it just 100%. With the grief factor and the anxiety level of like leaving the kiddos, you just kind of go like, oh, is it the right thing to do? But I like what you said about showing your kid that like this is not like, yeah, our mom's not here, but we can still take trips and we still see our friends and we still do all those things. That hunkering down is super comfortable, but only for so long. And eventually, I understand that we have a layer of complexity now with, you know, travel restrictions and COVID, but I think it's super important. I mean, you've taken a couple, right? You've taken a couple of trips with the kiddos.
I know,
you came out, for your sister's wedding, and that was like
the weekend it locked down.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It was crazy. Yeah. He was out here. He was out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I flew out to Chicago with all three kids. For my sister's wedding.
Did we go to that bounce house place? Or no, we stayed. We did. Yeah. COVID's raging.
Like there's no masks. There's nothing. We go to a bounce house in a strip in a mall. like, give me COVID. It just threw it at me.
March 13th. Hey, listen, it was still legal. It was March 13th or something like that.
It was St. Patty's weekend.
It was
shut down Chicago.
Yeah.
It was a crazy, like the city was empty. It was the most bizarre thing. But yeah, I traveled with the kids that weekend. And that was the first time I'd done plane travel with all three.
Yeah.
Solo. And that was I was telling Matt too, like the looks from other parents just kind of like, how are you doing this?
Yeah.
And like, we have one and we're struggle busing right now.
Yeah.
How are you like, and like, this is how it's going to be. We're going to pile in our little row of seats together and make it work.
You would have had the little one on your lap.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he was he one stand still at that time? Yeah. Someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause his birthday's in until the summer.
Yeah. He'd been two. Yeah. After that. So yeah, he would have been one and a half. So he was in my lap. The other two kids sit next to me.
Wow.
Car seats, whole nine.
Oh, wow.
So that was the first time. And then I've done some like road trips, like in state kind of thing, like up to the mountains a couple times. But once I took the kids to Tennessee, to the lake.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. So I took them out for that one. He just much like anything else, just kind of figure it out and go. Like he just,
yeah. The part I realized was like, so when we went to go visit family in Ohio and we stopped at one of the indoor water parks a little over halfway, and with the lack of like valets and stuff because of COVID, like, you know, you don't want to have interaction. I was like, oh, I should have packed just a hotel bag. So I'm only bringing one bag in because you don't have any help. And I'm like, oh, I'm packed. Like we're going to our family's house. And I've got bags for both of us. And I've got like her night bag. I'm like, oh, I should have thought that through. Cause I'm one dude. And you got to walk all the way to the parking lot and back. So one of the things about the solo travel is my buddy says it cause he had to travel with his little one by himself. He goes, I just need an airport Sherpa. I just need someone to get me through security. You know, I was like, yeah, I'd pay for that. Like I just need, right. Like from the car to the gate. Like once you get through security, you're golden. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's like, I don't need, you know, I can travel by myself. It's the act of getting there.
Especially if you still have strollers and things like that too. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember one time when Leanne was in a conference, actually she had a conference in San Diego. And I was flying down to Florida to go to her parents' place that they had in the winter with both kids by myself. And of course, where they were in Panama City Beach, which is shitty to get to because there's no direct flights. You always got to go through Atlanta.
Yep.
And Atlanta Airport, as we all know, sucks.
Well, it just has a bus, a train, and a zip line to get from gate to gate.
Sure enough, there's always a delay. Like you're like, oh yeah, I think you're going to make it. Oh no, flight's been delayed. So I was stuck in the Atlanta airport. I busted my ass to get down to this one gate I thought we were almost going to miss it. Get down there, delayed 6 hours.
Ooh.
And well, I got
not a delay for you can drive from Panama City to Atlanta in 6 hours. United did that to me one time. They delayed my flight. I was traveling from probably West Coast through Chicago down to St. Louis, and from Chicago O'Hare to St. Louis Airport is just outside of 6 hours, and the delay was like 7. I'm like, I can rent a car and get there faster. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I had 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I had the stroller. I had the little boogie board on the back of the stroller where Holden was like riding on that, on the skateboard attachment. Drew's in there and I'm busting my ass down with this thing. And then we get there. I'm like, great. I got to entertain these guys for like 5+ hours here.
Yeah. And yeah, that's that pretty part.
I think too, the other thing about traveling when they're little is it's the entertainment factor, right? Like there's something about that magical age around 5 or 6 where you're like, then you could like, I remember traveling with my oldest and she'd be like, well, how long till we get to California? 2 movies, just watch 2 Pixar movies and we'll be there. Right. Like it's easy, but when they're under that age,
like
it's
magic,
like their attention spans like anywhere between 15 to 20 minutes. And you're like, how many shows, you're just like, oh, you're killing me, kid. No, like we're just going to drink a lot of Benadryl. No, just no, mostly kidding.
Yep.
So traveling's, and then was there any motivation to make it like extra memorable?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. On that trip, I was like, I blew all the out. Wad, man. Nice. Like I was like, yeah. The Rocky Mountaineer. The Rocky Mountaineer, first of all, the train that we took, it's like a cruise on a train though, right? It's like white linen, meals, all the rest of it. You know, basically it was like for 2 days on that train, it was for the 3 of us. So 1 adult, 2 kids, it was just over 10 grand.
Oh,
so
yeah, you went all out. That was,
and then on top of that, when we arrived in Vancouver, we stayed at the Vancouver Fairmont Pacific Rim Hotel, which was the finest hotel on the water. Like you can actually see the seaplanes coming in and out.
Wow, that's cool.
I got a pretty good deal on that room actually, because we had my travel agent knew a person that got us the friends and family discount, but it was any hotel that basically you can get all your laundry done and your shoes shined as part of the amenities. It's
part of the room fare, right?
They're like, oh yeah, we'll pick your shoes up at 1 o'clock. We'll have them back.
Yeah,
it was pretty awesome. But yeah, no, I wanted to tour. They'd never been out to the mountains and stuff like in BC. So we toured around. We went and then we spent a week on the island, went down to Tofino. We did a sea kayaking trip like for a day. We did, you know, it was awesome. It was a really good trip.
But, you know, there's something too about like, I don't want to call it retail therapy. People talk about it, right? Where it's like you just kind of
for sure,
right?
Yeah, it gives you that buzz, that dopamine.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting. Like I made a very good rationalization that my wife would have wanted me to have certain things from a certain retailer. Since we're not sponsored, I'm not using anyone's names right now. And I can tell you exactly how much money you need to spend in order to have a tote guy, a shoe guy, and a clothes guy.
Oh yeah. For sure.
Said store.
Like, welcome back, sir.
Yeah. And like they mark you as soon as you hit the door.
Guess what they'll do for you when you do that? They'll stay open past closing. Like I left and I was like, they closed at 8. It's 9:50.
I kept. Did you have the montage in the dressing room?
I was like pretty woman walking down Rodeo Drive. I have all this money and no one wants to make me feel pretty. Oh man. It was one of those times. It doesn't happen often in life when you get the receipt and you just shred it. You don't even look. You're like, you know what? Yeah. It's gonna hurt regardless.
Yeah.
We'll deal with that later. But yeah, there's a little bit of that too. That just not a little bit of the like, I don't want to just put it in the box of like, you know, our wife would want us to do this, or like she would want us to be happy in this way. But I think it's in a healthy way, it's a it's okay to do that. And I like what Ben, you were saying, like the dopamine hit, like there's definitely something about like, you know, buying something shiny because it feels good, mm-hmm. especially early on in grief, for sure. Yeah. For yeah. sure.
And it's better than cocaine.
It won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no, there's, you don't go to jail.
No, exactly. You can still be a parent.
That's right.
Yeah. No, there's, I don't think I talked to anybody that didn't go through some sort of retail therapy spend of something just to kind of like, I don't know, release that energy.
Yeah.
I guess is one way to do it. I mean, cause there were a couple of big ticket items I bought that like had been kind of back there, but I was like, no, I shouldn't other things. I got to do this. And finally I was just like, you know what? It's my, I'm going to do this. Yeah. We'll do this. Yeah. For me. And granted it was a shiny mountain bike, but like it was, I don't know, but I did click that box. I mean, feel good. I could get outside and hang and do that, get that activity thing going. And yeah, it was choice.
Yeah.
So.
And how good do you feel doing that before COVID too? Like, cause COVID basically sucked all the bicycles off the planet.
They did. Like I got it right before everything. Once again,
I just Ben gave me a list of local West Coast based stores. Cause what my people here in the Midwest were telling me is they're filling orders on the coast faster because that's where the ships are. Also because where the weather's nicer. So they need them sooner.
Right.
So I'm like, I may actually buy a bike out of Denver and have it shipped to me because I cannot find. I mean, if you're under 5 foot and over 6'5", there's plenty of bikes for you.
Yeah.
And you want to spend $10,000.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. There's plenty of bikes at the $3,500 and over price point. I'm like, no, thank you. Not to pull the kid in the trailer. I'm not spending that much money. Look,
that's the thing. Like, I even got mine on sale. Like I got mine like 40% off when I got it. Cause like the previous year's model or whatever.
No, there's no,
way. Oh no.
You could probably make triple your money right now. If you put that on like Craigslist, is that still
higher demand? Right?
Yeah. Swapster.
Guy with bike. That's the thing. So I think I like the travels kind of, I like that idea too, that the travel brings back a little, like we can still do these things.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to put it. Plus especially when especially when they're of age, they should be doing things like with our littlest Ben, we're kind of like, we're going to go do the children's museum, whatever. And the kid's like, okay, whatever. Right. You're like, but like in Ken's case, I think it's a really good point to show, right, these young adult, again, what do you call them? What are they, tweens? I don't know. Whatever their age are.
A tween. I got a tween and a in-between tween.
In-between tween, right. And you show them because they have memories of doing things with mom, taking trips with mom, right? And showing them that, no, we can still take these trips, even though mom's not with us on this trip. Like, it's okay. So I think that's important to do for sure. And I think with the youngest, it's probably more just like, you know, Ben, I'm thinking about our situation. It's also like showing them that we can do it. I mean, we might cry and curse and scream, but we're going to get through this goddamn effort.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and into like, just that, I think in the back of my head for me, like I can do this.
Right. Well, that's like, a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause it's not just for the kids to be able to do, like, cause I have to be like the idea of taking them on a road trip. Just like in the back of my head going, oh, that sounds like the most miserable experience in my life, trying to put those kids in the car and drive them for 13 hours. And like, no, you can do this. And then checking that box, making it happen, getting out there and you're like, okay, we did it. Everyone survived. Yeah. Everyone's having a good time. We're here. We may get back. Like this, it's one of those things, those kind of like big life achievements. It was a big question mark of like, is this going to be a thing? Like, yeah, I could totally do this. And it's not that hard. Kids survived. I survived. I put shock and awe in random people's faces all throughout the airport.
Well, you know, even like my little trip back to see family in Ohio, I was like, I'm like, it's a, you know, it's right at the cusp. It's a 6-hour drive because you got to stop at least once with the little one. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, am I in any rush to get there? Not really. There's not like, there's not a timeline per se, right? There's not a thing we were showing up. We're just going to see family. I'm like, so what if I stop?
Yeah.
Grab a hotel. Yeah. We did a water park thing. But like, I'm like, oh, like if you're able to back the stress of time out a little bit, right? Like it kind of helps, especially like the road trip thing, or even like, you know, going on your train trip. You're like, we don't have to like fly out there and get there in two, you know, in a day. We can take our time. We can enjoy it. Like, I think that's another thing where it's like, you know, does it really matter that you spend 4 days at the destination you're at versus three, if it makes the travel easier? Like, right. Like if you're going to spend whatever at Disneyland a night, could you stop at a hotel that has a pool and the kids can enjoy it and you're not exhausted or whatever. I think that's another thing too. It's like, yeah, a 13-hour car drive sounds miserable, or you break it up into 2 days and you still have as much fun. Right. Like, I think that's kind of something I've had to do with myself, especially being alone with a little one. I'm like, you know, we'll get there when we get there. And sometimes it upsets the people. They're like, well, why aren't you showing up on Friday? Because I don't feel like driving 12 straight hours with a 3-year-old. I don't feel like driving 12 hours. It's, I don't feel like subjecting a 3-year-old to 12 hours in the car. That's
Because then she's not happy. Then I'm not happy. Nobody's happy.
Totally. Exactly. Let's see what else. Do we want to touch on any helpful? I think we talked about, Ben and I talked last time real quick, just because we're talking about the travel thing. Was there any products that you found useful? I know you mentioned when you're traveling, when they're little, like anything useful as the solo parent traveling, either now or before, because we talked, Ben's a big fan of like really good backpacks. I think I mentioned the little travel, I know your kids are older, but like the travel little high chairs that hook onto stuff. They're amazing for travel and like local. Was there anything like that for travel? Just to kind of wrap up the travel thing and then we can go to something else if we want.
The thing that when I had to do it a couple of times just in airports and stuff like that is having that was handy, is having one of those collapsible strollers. Like I think ours was the mountain buggy, then it has the skateboard attachment. So when you have one kid can stand and they actually like standing on it in there to bust around, you can keep all your shit together. And then everybody, you know, you can boogie pretty good in an airport when you have at least a couple kids. I mean, if you were crazy and had like Ben, three, and then you need the double stroller.
Double stroller with a skateboard.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, rocket package. It is not legal to harness a child to pull a stroller. I've looked it up. Don't do it.
Like, I tell you what I did, though. I got one of those rolling strollers and put a kid on top of one of the rolling strollers, hooked a little, like, cart thing behind that with a bungee. It had one sitting on there, and I was carrying the other one. So I'm dragging two, carrying one. Wheels, man. Wheels are wheels are where it's at. It's good.
Thanks,
times.
Bob the caveman,
I was just gonna say, where did you see that? In Vietnam somewhere?
They're like three. I got 15 kids back here.
And that's not chickens and
so we took our honeymoon in Vietnam, and you're not kidding. And the funniest part is the law is
they're on a moped,
and here's the reverse rule or law. If you're over 18, you must wear a helmet. So you'll see dad picking up four kids on a moped. He's got a helmet, but his entire lineage is helmet free.
That's right.
They're like,
one kid on each shoulder while he's under 18
needs a damn helmet. Over 18, you're dumb enough not to wear one.
You're using up too much space with that helmet.
Oh my God. It was incredible what they could pull off on a moped. You're like, they have two refrigerators, a washer, a dryer, and a pallet full of cement just to go to the house. You're like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So a good stroller. I think that actually, you know what, Ben, that's probably a really good one just from our talk when we're talking about stuff. Like, I think a very useful stroller, one for like home trekking around, that's maybe not as travel friendly, you know, like collapsible or whatever, but definitely one that's maybe, like you said, with the skateboard or whatever, can like more travel friendly, helps out when you're solo. Like having like, if your jam is a double wide, that's great, but just know like that ain't fitting on the airplane, right? Like,
and you can't get that through security because they want that to go through the scanner.
Oh, that's right. Too. Right. Yeah, exactly. So
I think you can though do it through that special little, like they'll let you take it, but then you have to check it right as soon as you get on the ramp.
Yeah,
at the gate. Yeah, but you'd be one of those where you're like, I'm checking it at the gate.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
home. Can you see what I got going on here? Yeah. Check the breast milk for poison and exactly. scare me for bomb dust.
That insanity. Oh man. What about, I know we try to tee it up a little bit. And I know Ben has his product waiting on the shelf. I know we mentioned talking about books or accounts or people like you follow that you found helpful now or then. Ben, you want to, since you have your book right there.
Oh, Ken's got his book.
No, it was, sorry, it was Ken, my book.
Yeah,
my
Ken book. Has it. I'm yeah, sorry, Ken has, Ken has it.
Da, 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 da.
Amazing.
I know. This so is great for podcast, first, by the way. The,
he's I know. So up. For all he's of those people up. That are listening.
Yeah,
he's holding up. All 12 are all six of you.
Right.
The first book was that I actually read, was given to me from a friend, was Option B by Sheryl Sandberg.
Right.
And I think Adam Grant as well helped write it. Yeah. So, but her story was pretty poignant. I found it useful just because it covered off more in terms of my circumstances, a sudden loss.
Right.
As opposed to someone that's has gone through an illness mm-hmm. with their partner. So, yeah, so that was, and it covers, you know what, I was thinking about it. I remember reading this part on the plane. It has just a lot of good, like she has a whole chapter on raising resilient kids.
Oh,
and
that's a good
like,
one.
Like this whole section on, and I remember that being like a really significant thing. Cause you're always thinking about, man, how am I going to deal with this with my kids?
Yeah.
And how am I going to, you know, not only trying to understand their grief and the loss and all that kind of stuff, but that's ultimately what we want for our kids, is that for them to be resilient and to, you know, be able to take on, you know, whatever life deals them. So, yeah, that was one of the things I liked about the book. And then, it's just a lot of good. She shares a lot of good stuff on, because eventually she basically goes into that, to love and laugh again chapter. It's a little bit, you know, kind of stereotypical, but it's kind of what I don't know, at least for me, what I was looking for too, is that sort of, you know, not necessarily the instructions, but a blueprint of, you know, how are we going to get from A to B? Like, how am I going to get from how I'm feeling now to where I'm actually going to want to consider, you know, trying to have a partner again, or find love again and find joy in my life again and all of that stuff. So, so it's a pretty good read for a lot of those reasons.
And did you have one?
I'm going to go on the opposite end. Like I was trying to find something that would give me, some indication of a direction or idea or choices or chances. Same thing. It was a sudden, you know, so I had no time to prepare. Like it was instantaneous. Mm-hmm. Here's a new change of life kind of thing. And so I looked at all over the place, like, but there's a couple books. I'll say the one that I just could not stand was The Grief and Loss Cure.
Oh, that sounds bad from the get-go.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Is it heavy on the veggies? I don't understand.
Like a cure? You need to be cured.
It's like, Shazam, I have banished the grief from your body.
And you better not ever talk about this again.
Fucking go lucky now, buddy.
You better not ever.
Before you go to bed, chant this.
Yeah. Never talk about this again, ever.
Hold on. Do you remember who gave you this book?
I downloaded it myself. I'm just going through and I'm just like,
so you're an idiot.
Books.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Okay. I'm just kidding. I'm
like,
right.
So like,
So here's the thing. The fact that it has the word cure, or whatever. That's the whiskey.
Do you say it when in Indiana?
I'm trying cure. To, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Cure. It has cure in it. Someone edit this, please, for the love of God. That book should be thrown out. You don't cure grief. That's bullshit.
And it was still doing that. It was locked into that, like, the stages of grief. Once again, it's like it's been
denial, anger. Yeah. Oh, right, like that, once you've been angry, then it's then you're done with being angry.
Right.
Yeah. As you can hear
so
my
then,
voice.
But that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother talk by itself. So then that was it. And then I read the Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck and Everything is Fucked by Mark Manson.
Yeah.
Those are some good books. Just cause I know, like at that point I was in a mindset of brash and kind of in shock value and face kind of that thing, like I, that rawness. Mm-hmm. So it kind of spoke to me. This one was a heavy book because it was a survivor of the Holocaust. The 12.
Wow, you went deep into grief. I did.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
So the Man's Search for Meaning.
Hey, I love that book.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. Totally,
that's an amazing book.
Yeah,
I actually read that one as well. Incredible.
Yeah,
yeah.
Man's Search for Meaning.
Man's Search for Meaning is actually, and actually a lot of people, I remember reading about it and why I ordered it. And a lot of people in Hollywood that have read it and it's like changed their whole outlook on life.
Oh, really?
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people. It's incredible. And it kind of gives you that perspective. I think it's one of the things like, because, you know, obviously our perspective changed tremendously. And so it's nice to have someone kind of, I don't know, smack it back to you in a similar method of like, hey, there's other just horrible shit out here and I've persevered and here's how, like this, and here's a story. And like, and this kind of gives you that. Okay. Yeah.
I love how he unpacks the both the psychological but also the sociological changes that can happen to a person.
Yeah.
And he can actually explain these kind of, they're pretty heavy duty theories that he actually came up with and everything, but he actually explains them in a way a lay person can understand it.
Yeah.
So it's really well written. Yeah, I was really surprised actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Matt, you mentioned this one, The Group. Did you refer that one to me?
Yeah, from the University of Tennessee or something like that over there.
Yeah, so I read that one.
Duke or something like that. Yeah, that's a good one. That is a good
guys,
one.
Yeah, that kind of followed a men's group.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Well, didn't it come about from like studying and then the group just kept going?
Going, yeah.
They're like, it was like like some guy's doing his doctoral dissertation. He's like, I just want to talk to some guys who grieve. And he got these guys together and they're like, hey, kind of like this. You're grieving, I'm grieving, we're grieving, you're grieving, Bob. Let's get together.
They
basically created a group.
Yeah, it's cool. And then the book, It's Okay to Not Be Okay. I know a lot of people prefer that one.
Yep.
That one, I would say, like, once again, you can't compare grief. Everybody's is different, you know, and that book did not speak to me because
we talked about this in Denver.
Yeah.
And you and I talked about this 2 weeks ago.
Oh, did you? Cause like, cause like, she's like, we it's did. Okay to just sit in your bed. Cause like, let it consume you. Accept it.
I'm like fucking deja vu right now. Yeah.
I've got three kids. I need to eat breakfast and have laundry and function. And I need to go to work, you know? And so like, I don't have the luxury of collapsing in the bed in a pile of grief for 3 weeks. I need to make sure other people are alive.
A bed, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciate her candor of realizing that everything that she had done previously before her husband died was kind of a farce. And so it kind of changed where she approached it. But I think the way that she portrayed it in the book with allowing you to kind of accept it was a good idea. But at the same point, like I said, it just didn't speak to me because of this different scenario.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and it's funny you say that because that's what I said to Matt a couple weeks back. I was saying that, and I did her writing course too.
Oh, like
That. I did the Writing Your Grief course that she put out there just to give me a different perspective. I was actually getting into journaling a little bit more and partly because like Leanne was a huge journaler. So for the first 6 months, like I was going through all of her journals. Like I was reading stuff like all the way back, like to when we first started dating even. And she'd kept them all, which is amazing. And I have this basically this written library that she did that That's I'm cool. keeping,
yeah.
You know, of all of her stuff. But so it allowed me to sort of go through a very, you know, cathartic process of basically reading, rereading, and well, I shouldn't say rereading, reread some sections that I knew of, but all honestly, all of this stuff I'd never even read before because I would never read her journals. It wasn't a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. But it was awesome that it was almost like a gift that she left me behind yeah. that I could go to. But you know, you're right.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick. I've done the same thing. So I actually have kept a bunch of Marcy's business notepads. And I think you and I talked about this the last time too, literally looking for an answer in ROI and third quarter profit returns, going like somewhere in there. Did you write down what you want our daughter to do when she grows up?
Right.
And again, why would I ever have gone through a business journal? It's like kind of searching for something. And what's interesting in it, in some ways, every now and then she would have had like a list or she would have something. And I'm like in there because the business doesn't speak to you, but your wife was journaling, there would be something. And I'm like, I'm so glad I kept it because there's a note in there about, you know, don't forget to make a dinner reservation for our anniversary or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Right. It was like, oh, so even in the middle of her work day, she was still thinking about us or make Blair's eye appointment or whatever. So keep going. But yeah, it's interesting how you would never crack that open if you're a healthy individual. But in our situation, you're like, let me go read my person's intimate thoughts and details.
Oh, yeah.
Never let me read if they were alive.
And on top of that, too, like you're searching. That's the thing. You're searching for every scrap of them, right?
Oh,
you
1,000%. Want that.
Like you go through their clothing and you're like, oh, maybe I'm going to find something here. Maybe I'll find, you know, when you're going through stuff. Like it was, you know, I remember doing that. And it was, yeah, you are. You're looking for those kind of things.
I like how you say that, looking for every scrap of them. That is 1,000% true.
Yeah.
In any little place you can find it for sure.
Totally.
Especially early on. So what do you think about the writing course? Sorry, I kind of jumped there.
But yeah, Megan Devine, like her writing course is set up so that it has these prompts that they send you these email prompts every day with different topics.
Okay.
And of different, you know, basically centered around grief and how you're dealing with it. And the big thing, or I guess the best thing about it is that you can cherry pick off of those things. Like, you know, out of the 30 days or whatever it was, I probably did maybe 8 of the topics. Like you can cherry, you know, choose the ones that speak to you. And then, you know, you can kind of do those. But the thing getting back to Ben's point was you hear these people and you're in a Facebook group of about 50 or 60 people.
Yep.
And they're all doing the course. And then basically you can see all of their writing prompts. Whoever wants to post their stuff, like you post it and you can read through it, right? So you get that perspective in a massive amount of way. That was one thing, is you hear all these different stories.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Of people, and you're like, holy, like that's tough. Or oh, you lost your son, your wife, and your husband, like you know, your daughter, whatever, all in one go.
Yeah.
And you're like, oof, you know, that sucks. But the other thing that, and getting back to that point that Ben made is that, yeah, I think that she unpacks it so that no one feels like everything that you experience is normal and is okay. And, but almost to the point where she wants you to revel in it. And if you choose to stay in your suffering and your grief and you're feeling down and depressed, all that, she's like, that's fine. That's okay. And I would almost argue for some people, that's not a good thing to tell them that, because then that green lights them to say, yeah, why should I want to feel any different? I feel this way. So don't tell me I can't feel this way. I'm going to feel crappy forever. And it's almost like you get that reading through some people's shit. Like I was reading through people that was taking that writing course and we're talking 7, 8, 9 years out. And I'm thinking, holy, like,
yeah, really? Because their identity, like like they can't. And I talked to my therapist about this, but the idea of like, there becomes almost a thing of the grieving widower identity. Like if you aren't actively like grieving openly, onto like a forum like that, like going like, oh, this loss and this connection. Yeah. And like, you're doing a disservice to the person that you lost.
Right.
Like, the fact that you're getting happy or moving on or accepting these other pieces into your life means that you're leaving them behind or whatever. Like, there's like this.
Mental people disconnect. Want to compartmentalize it, right?
Yeah.
They want to say, okay, clearly he's okay now because he's over here.
Right.
And he's not, which is, it is. And actually that I was just looking at this book, that, you know, Sheryl Sandberg wrote, and she was, that was one of the things I highlighted this. I was just leafing through it. And she goes, one of the most important things I've learned is how deeply you can keep loving someone after they die. You may not be able to hold them or talk to them, and you may even date or love someone else, but you can still love them every bit as much. And then she quotes playwright Robert Woodruff Anderson captured it perfectly. Death ends a life, but it doesn't end a relationship.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The other one I love is like, the only reason you can have great grief is because, it sounds bad. The only reason you have deep grief, I should say, and it's a quote I'm stealing.
Is a great love.
Yeah. Is because you have a great love. Right.
Yep.
Which is true. I mean, you know, when somebody on the news dies, you're like, I'm sad, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sucks. But
when it's close and someone you love, it's a much more deeper, meaningful grief.
And which then, is true. Like,
and it doesn't stop.
No. And there's a really fun, because I had a conversation with the kids. Like, the timing of this is pretty phenomenal. I just had a conversation with the kids maybe last week with regards to like opening hearts up for love and things. And like, because like we were talking about like how mommy's in our hearts and how she's, but and then I'm like, so, but the kids are like, I don't forget how we got the copy. I was like, well, all right. So it's like, so here it goes. Like, I met mommy and I fell in love with mommy. So I had the space for her with love in my heart. And it was just us for a long time. And then we had you, Nadia. And then I loved you and you fit right in my heart too. My heart grew. And then we had Beckham. And like, and I was like, I just went down the line with the kids. Like, the heart has this tremendous ability to contain and grow with love. You don't have this like finite space, or you have to remove one to allow another. Like,
right.
You just pack more love into that bad boy. And they're like, oh, okay. You could just see that little, like that little visual click with them as far as going, add in more love, add in more love, add in more love.
And they're like, you know, what's interesting is most of our romantic relationships prior to, or even after, I guess, that end, right? You go like, well, I don't love that person anymore, right? So it fits the narrative of, I have 100 units of love to give, and I can't love this person anymore because we didn't work out or whatever. But when you have death stop the relationship, movies, society, books, poems, the general tone is you love one person, right? And that's who you love.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of great conversations around, you can have a really interesting, loving relationship with someone who is dead, right?
Yep.
Healthy, right? And still bring and have more love in your heart, right? So we all have multiple children, and they hopefully, like, love, you explained it beautifully, Ben, you know, that I love you. You know, I tell Blair this. I'm like, who's in my heart? Mommy, Blair, and Samantha. And then we can go, you know, grandma. And it's like, but that's true. It's like, you know, you don't love, well, maybe more often than not, you love everyone the same.
You like them more or less.
Right. You're definitely liking the changes for sure. You're like, you look at the big board every morning. You're like, listen, sweetheart, you're down 4 points because of last night's little incident. So let's just try to maybe work a little harder to get back up at the top of the board, shall we?
I still love you.
Yeah, I still love you, but your life points are down just a touch. Right?
Matt's love-o-meter.
Yeah, love-o-meter. So that like-o-meter. But no, it's a really good, because there's not, like, I mean, I this is maybe great homework. Can you name a movie that shows this?
The Welcoming and Passing of Love?
Yeah, where like the spouse dies and the movie is about the person moving on. Right.
Oh,
actually, I'm sure there's one, but
oh yeah,
it's a side story. It's a Christmas story with
it's a Hallmark movie. I swear I'll fly out there and hate
you.
No,
it's not. It's not Hallmark. It's like they swap.
I know. Love Actually. There's that one in Love Actually.
Okay. Well, yeah.
That's there's one the one in Love Actually. Liam Neeson.
Yeah. There's the one in Love Actually. And then there's the one where they swap houses for the holiday. Like the LA goes to England.
Oh, I do.
Christmas yes. Story. Is that it?
It's no. Yeah. No. But they, no, I know what's the one you're talking about.
And the guy in England is a widow.
Yes.
With two kids.
That Reese right. Witherspoon in that.
No, Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz. That's it. Cameron Diaz.
Mm-hmm. And one not attractive actor because he, there's no way in real life you'd ever land Cameron Diaz, if I remember correctly. It's like Zach Galifianakis is the dad.
No, but he doesn't land Cameron Diaz. He lands the lady back. Lands the Brit. That goes
but yeah,
to
but
LA.
It's still, there's no way it's like, on it's God's
Jack
green
Black.
Earth.
Oh yeah.
Right. No. Yeah. It's like Jack. No, you're right. It is Jack Black. You're right. There's no, yeah. You're like, never would happen in real life.
But he's funny.
Trust me.
That's right, no, man.
So okay, so there's a few, right?
But yeah, like, but it's not the main story. It's like a side note part of the story.
And so even like, even if you try, like, so if you try to go find references to it, it's not easily accessible, right? I mean, there's plenty of movies of divorces and blended families, which are awesome and wonderful in their own right. But at the same time, there's not a lot.
No.
Right. And books, if it is, it's usually who the spouse that's left is in some sort of state of grief and they're not moving on. Right. Yeah. Like there's a movie with the guy, what's his name? Only for the eyes or something like that. It's the guy who played Jesus Christ. What's his name? The actor. What's his name? In
the most recent Blank. Jesus Christ.
Yes. I can't remember.
I'll look it up real quick.
Anywho, he's in an action movie.
Ben's our fact checker.
Anyway, he's in a movie with J-Lo. He's a cop. His like family died in a car accident. And he goes around doing like good deeds because he's like, you know, he's just kind of wandering around. But it's another example of like, he's just stuck in this state of trying to figure it out. Right. Yeah. And he's not really moving on. And so anyway, So I don't know how we've done, but there's not a lot of great things you can point in to teach ourselves or even our kids to say, look, love can grow and still be healthy after loss, which I think is, I mean, I'm glad you brought up that quote, Ken. I mean, it's fitting. And it's interesting because like, it's a real hard thing to wrestle, right? I mean, I know we've talked a little bit about dating and I don't want to beat the same topic to death, but just entering into that foyer without a quote like that is really confusing, right? You're like, because you feel like you're dishonoring or you might feel like you're not doing justice or has it been long enough or is it too long? Or who would want me? I'm still broken. Yeah. All that shit, right? But knowing that little quote that you just said is actually pretty powerful, going like, no, I can do this and still have a loving relationship with my late spouse. The interesting part is, since most people don't know how to handle that, it takes a little bit of work. What's the movie?
Passion of the Christ? The Jim,
that guy. Yeah. What's his name? Yeah. Jim. He's in a movie where like his family dies in a car accident. And he's just kind of like wandering around.
Oh, wait.
And,
yeah. You know,
it's like, yes. Yeah. Like, it's him. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like J-Lo was in the movie.
J-Lo.
J-Lo's been in a lot of movies.
So bad.
Poor her and
A-Rod. Yeah, I feel real sorry for him.
Yeah, I feel real sorry for those two. Please.
You want to talk about loss?
Yeah.
You feel like the day they announced they broke up, the picture he had on like Instagram, it's like him on his yacht that's like not enough money, sailing out of Miami,
suffering.
Just looking like a God, I'm like, oh, Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
The rest of us break up with J-Lo would be crying on the couch and covered in bonbons and ice cream. Empty ice
cream. That'd
be
celebrating because of the alimony.
Well, they didn't get divorced. They broke up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Oh, man. Anyway. What was another one? There was...
But I think that's a good, like, you know, I'm sure there's probably some decent books, like fictional books probably written with it in there, but it's not. I mean, there was that show, The Unicorn. I didn't watch it, but right. He was a widower.
Yeah,
right?
Actually, I've watched.
And what did you think then?
So I've watched season one with trepidation. And then I watched the first like four or five episodes of season two. I remember it because it was fresh. I mean, the timing of that show and when All of Our Wives died, it was like It was eerily close.
Coming. I remember it was coming out. I was like, and I kind of took like a slap in the face.
I did.
Like,
she was like,
because it's also like it's a sitcom. I'm like, listen, asshole.
Yeah, there's comedy.
Nothing funny.
I know. It's like, that's what I mean. I avoided some of those shows, man. Oh, I could not take it. I couldn't watch TV for a long time. Yeah. Like I was just like, ugh.
Yeah,
wasn't so into it.
So it was like, hey guys, I've got this show idea. Follow me with this. It's going to be hysterical. So this guy's wife dies, right? He's got two kids.
Sounds hilarious.
And he's like a year out and decides to start dating again. And it's hysterical, like nonstop laughs. He's got some friends. He's awkward. It's terrible, but it's so funny, right?
And then the insanity ensues.
But I will say, like, it was a touching show. Because I just like eventually it got the better part of me. It's like I was like, I can't not see this. I know it exists. I've got like it just kind of got under my skin. And so I was like, I gotta watch it. And the friends, like it's a sweet show. Like it's definitely has some of that like awkward, but it's at the same time, like any of us that have started dating again have experienced the same awkwardness of the dating scene and walking into it and trying to navigate that. So like you look back out and you're like, that is actually kind of awkward, funny, and terrible all at the same time. And then you have the kids are in the fact and like, and it was really well done. So it's this really nice combination of touching and yet funny. And, I don't know. So I enjoyed season one and then he gets a girlfriend in season two. And I'm kind of running through like her meeting the friends and how they're awkward and she's awkward. Like it's, I don't know. I haven't watched in a while just cause my life got super busy. But it turned out better than I expected. I thought it was going to be, I thought I was going to turn on and I was going to hate it because of where I was, but it's actually, it was surprising, man, put it that way. So,
okay, well, so yeah. Not 1% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes or however. I never still don't understand their ratings, but yeah. But so it's just, interesting. Like even talking, you know, there are some great, you and I love Bluey from Australia. Mm. Right. And there's a great one about the Baji that dies, right. The little parrot thing. And it's a great way how they handled death and it's great. And so like, even you're like, okay, well, we can talk about death. Right. And that's okay. But there's not a great, like, and that's what it's like to be a solo parent. Right. Like there's not a lot of references to that, even just in anything. And, you know, it's that whole, like, you know, not being reflected in society because, and we've looked up the stats, you're really small, but still at the same time, you're like, it would be nice if, I don't know, in that sitcom, the next door neighbor was a widower. Like, I don't know, like just help a brother out. Like,
just to draw some ideas, like, right. What do I say when my kid goes blah, or like, are we going to have another mommy or like, some of on the widow side of it, like, cause I know some of our friends have did this, like they have one kid and they're like, hey, are you going to meet some other guy? Cause I'd like a little brother, a little sister. Like, what type of conversation, like, how do you go? Oh, I know how to answer this without just like that, shell shocked.
Yeah.
Dumb look on your face going.
It was funny. My nanny actually told me this story. She went down to the Circle K with my youngest and they took their bikes down there. And then as they were biking, they were just talking. And then, so Drew says to her, and he's like, yeah, well, if my dad and Julia end up getting married, I hope they have another baby. And if they do, I hope it's a baby girl because I want a little sister. And I was like, whoa. His mindset is obviously a lot further along than mine.
He's already laying plans. He's like, hey, I think pink could be a really nice color in this other room. I think
we should do a little light pink in a white bedroom.
But it's funny how kids think that, right? Like they think of those possibilities right away.
Yeah.
I think we don't give them credit for that kind of stuff.
What is your youngest
two. Say about?
Yeah, right. But he's gonna be three this summer. Right? Yeah,
he goes bah.
I forget. Blair's a bit exceptional verbally, so we're over here doing.
Blair's a girl. Here. Rylan's a boy, so he's younger and a boy. Yeah. So he's big on the sound effects and like running into walls.
Yeah. I mean, and he's the youngest. And has two siblings that talk for him.
A fair point.
So basically he probably has all the words in his head, but he knows how to signal and his siblings say, no, he wants this.
It's just like bam bams into everything. So it's
So I, you know,
but I would say the kids, so we did that. It's like, I introduced Steph to the kids. I was like, hey, this is dad's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And like, we had this, like, I even sat to my therapist, and Steph and I sat down with my therapist. Like, all right, how do we do this? How do we get this in front of the kids and do it the right way?
Yeah.
Way overthought it.
I know that's typical adults, right?
Yeah. they're like, not even tell me. She's like, dad, you already talked to us about this when you said you were going to start dating.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, and she's, seven.
Yeah.
At least you got her to look up from TikTok for 6 seconds to tell you you're an idiot. So that's good parenting right there.
If there was one app that I could delete from the world, that'd be TikTok.
Right.
Yeah. That doesn't exist over here. They're all the kids.
We're like, whatever.
100% fine. They're like, here it is. They're like, okay, cool. So does that mean she's going to come with us to the park? I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, awesome.
Yeah.
You remember, did I tell you the story about the first time with my oldest, like getting involved in the local community? Because it wasn't really when she was teeny tiny, why would I be around, right? Like, I mean, I was around, but like, why would I go to the chili cook-off when I didn't live there, right? So she started playing softball. Did I tell you this before?
You did, yes.
Right? I don't know if Ken heard this. So she starts playing softball, like Little League. So I go down and people knew of me, but they didn't know me yet, right? So I'm there and like, here we go. And almost everyone in this community is pretty much married to the person they're still married to, right? And so I go to the softball game. This one of my daughter's teammates comes up through the fence and is like, oh, who are you? And I was like, oh, I'm Samantha's dad. And she goes and she looks down because her stepdad was just coaching, who's an awesome guy too, right? And looks down and is like, kind of like, she gets a kind of weird look on her face. And I said, well, yes. And I go, Samantha has two dads. And she's like, I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Okay, I'm ready. I can handle this. And the little girl goes, does that mean she gets two allowances? And I was like, yep, that's what she gets. Absolutely. And the girl just walked off. I'm like, that was way easier. And I love how her mind goes to like, dad gives money, right? Like, I was
so you get two Christmases or two allowances?
I was expecting this complex, long, I was like, nope. She was like, she went to go have her, red vines and her whatever for Little League or walk and talk that they have down here. But I was like, it's especially, I would say, sub 12, sub 13, it's pretty black and white. You don't have
it's 100% black and white. There's no gray.